Hello and welcome to Interactive Distractions, episode number 170. My name is Christopher Keough, and I am here with Jeff Chorney.
Hey.
And Travis Baum.
Hello.
Normal crew is back today, but later on we're going to have a couple of guests. The people responsible for Gemini Rue, the adventure point-and-click adventure game we were playing on IndieStream this past week. So stay tuned for that. We're also going to be doing some distractions and news, and then afterwards we'll do some new releases, listener email, and a new question of the week.
Why not?
Yeah, we are.
So let's get this thing going. Jeff, what's up, brother?
Not too much, man. It's been actually kind of a busy week of work. The weather's crap. It's like rain and snow mixture the last few days, and it's supposed to be like this all week.
Yeah
it's pretty terrible. But I don't know. Tomorrow night, Tanya's work's having a party, and they actually rented out one of the best bars in Toronto. It's called Panorama. It's like on the top of one of the taller buildings in Toronto. It basically has a panoramic view of the city, and it's open bar and free food and everything. So
nice.
It's going to be fun. I'm getting off work a couple hours early. Downside of that, I have to go to work earlier tomorrow. But eh, whatever. But looking forward to that. And that's it, man.
Cool.
Went to a birthday party last weekend. I'm sure you guys saw pictures on Facebook. I don't remember much of it. Yeah, good times.
Travis, how you doing, buddy? You're recovering okay?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Cool. Doing really, really well. 4 more days left with Sonic, and I am done.
Yeah. I saw that picture that you posted that had like your screen where it said 6 days.
Yeah, it said 6 days left, but then I realized that, you know what? I'm not going to work Monday and Tuesday. So the person that's taken over, we're doing a transitional week. She's coming in, and on my way out, I'm kind of like, you know.
Is she cute?
She's coming in, and she is
Way to dodge the question there, buddy.
I'm being professional here. She's a colleague.
Anyway, being polite, in other words.
Yeah, basically pretty much like, you know, these are the alarm codes, you have the safe codes, introducing her to, you know, regular customers and the bank people and whatnot. So that whole transition. I was originally, like, my 2 weeks notice, like, spanned into next week, like, with Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, but she told me that she's not going to need me at all. So I'm like, great, that's good. Sunday's my last day. And I'm going to have a week and 8 days off before MGC and before I start with GameStop.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, really good. Jeff, you know what I got planned for this first week and a half off?
What do you got planned?
Nothing.
Nice.
Video games. That's what he's
nice.
Got playing.
You're going to be so bored after like day 3.
Hell yeah. So one of the things that I don't want to wait on, though, is Chris, what's the haps, man?
Not a whole lot. This weekend was interesting because my dryer died last week.
Ooh.
So I didn't want to spend the money, so I fixed it myself. It was more than that big of a deal. It was just the heating element. It's like changing an air filter in a car. It was pretty easy.
Hmm.
So that was the excitement of the weekend.
Quite a manly man you are. You're quite the manly man you are.
Sometimes. Liam is 11 months old today.
Wow.
So we're getting ready for his first birthday for next month.
The big one.
Yeah. And this kid is so close to walking, it's not even funny. He's been all of his, like, fine motor skills and shit like that. He's been really far ahead. What he's behind on right now is like verbal skills, because he'll make sounds and shit like that. But he's not yet saying, he's not like calling Crystal Mama and me Dada yet. And that's something that he should probably be doing by this time. So he's a little behind on that, but he's ahead in like everything else. So it's like it's nice to see that. It makes me feel good. He's got good genes. Nothing. You can cut this shit out if you want, man, because that was fucking horrible. Fucking nothing. You guys suck. You guys fucking suck.
Sorry, dude. I'm not even going to blame my mute button for that.
Let's talk about some games.
Oh man! Actually, I'm starting to look forward to the days when Jason's on the show, because I can actually talk to someone who's a father.
Yeah, true.
All right, let's talk about games. Jeff, you go first this week.
Oh man, you want me to go first? What have I been playing? Whole lot of nothing new. Sticking with the hardcore a little bit here and there.
Ooh, I beat that.
Did you beat it?
I beat it.
Nice.
I beat it with
Samurai Siori, Ninja.
I think that's her name. The mm-hmm. samurai chick that we were talking about last week.
Yep.
Yeah, she's kind of easy mode. I don't know
really?
If you downloaded her yet.
Then
or not,
I might but... download her then. No, I haven't
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, she's kind of easy mode.
Cool. I think she's 200
what else
points
been playing,
I'm 160.
What's Turbo that, Jeff? Travis? I'm sorry. Travis kind of interrupted you.
That's fine. I was just saying I have 160 points and she's like 200, so.
Right, right.
I got to buy more.
How far have you gotten now?
Sorry?
How far have you gotten now?
I think third chapter, so third, but not that much further. But,
hey, there's a really good grind spot if you want to take advantage of it.
Where's that?
In the
bedroom.
The second chapter where you're fighting the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it splits in two.
Apart. Yeah.
You can actually, like, if you blow up the bombs, they add to your multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kill the gators in the water, mm-hmm. and they give you the points. And yeah, I did that
just keep doing
once,
that.
You know, just, I was like, I'm going to give this a shot. And what actually happens is you can only gain points for a certain amount of time. So after you, I think it's like 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, it says that you get like this negative penalty and everybody you kill gives you no points for the rest of the time that you're playing. But in the time that, you know, in that 20 minutes, if you sit there and you like figure out the pattern and get through and like get your multiplier up and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking 90 million points, man.
Oh, wow.
No shit. So you can level up pretty quick right there.
Awesome. MVC 3. Played
hey,
a lot
that.
Of that. Yes. Still playing actually a lot of that. I'm more liking it now than hating it, but...
Oh, really?
Nothing
People
more to
aren't
really
using
add.
Sentinel as much?
Sorry? Well, no, it's I'm getting better now at facing Sentinel players as long as... a certain kind of Sentinel player. Like, I have a problem with zoning in that game. Doesn't matter who the characters are. It's not even just Sentinel. Just if people just play keep away with me, I have a hard time dealing with that. But people who play Sentinel like straight up and don't try to like just strictly zone with them, I'm doing better. I still think he's broken his piss, but yeah. Or not broken his piss, overpowered as hell. But I'm doing better with him. But it's I am enjoying it quite a bit, and nothing really new to add. Really, just still playing it. And other than that, that is pretty much all I've been playing, is that and some arcade games here or there. I actually, you know what, I played some Shadowrun the other day.
Oh, really?
The Xbox version?
The Xbox version, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Harlock and I were talking about it, Captain Harlock, and we were saying how good it was and how we just stopped playing it because something else came out or something happened. So we decided, we just went and started playing it that night, and it's still fun. It's surprising. There's still people playing that game online. Oh, I played Left 4 Dead 2, speaking of Captain. Yeah, there are. Left 4 Dead 2, there's like a downloadable, like a DLC pack made by a community called, oh my god, I think it's Dead Before Dawn, I believe it's called. And it's basically the Dawn of the Dead movie kind of remake in the Left 4 Dead 2 engine. So you're going through like a lot of places like the movie we're in, all created with like in-game assets and stuff like that. And it's fun, but it's way too long. Like we played a good... I think hour and a bit and didn't even beat that level. So it kind of gets a little bit repetitive. Once you get into the mall, you're just kind of doing the same thing over and over again. But it's free, so if you have Left 4 Dead 2 on PC, you might want to, you know, check it out. It is pretty cool, for sure.
That is cool.
Yeah. Well, that's it, man. Not
cool,
a lot of
Travis,
gaming.
What you got?
Let's see. I played a little Gemini Rue. We touched on it, you know, on the stream a little bit with the demo that we played. But
you're almost done, right?
Yeah, I'd say I'm about 60-70% done with it. I got stuck on a pretty tough puzzle and I just got past it today.
Okay.
So that kind of held me back a little bit, but, I'm enjoying that game a good bit. Now, did you pick it up or did you just play the demo, Chris?
I haven't picked it up yet, but I'm going to.
Right. It's continuing. It's stellar performance for me. I really like what the guys at Wajet have done with this. You know, it's... like things that have historically in the past for me with these point and click adventure games, like I can lose interest really, really fast. Now maybe it's a testament that I haven't played one of these games in a long time and, it's just the nostalgia is keeping me in it or not, but I think it's more of the game itself that I will never stop playing game because like I'm stuck on a puzzle or the story just kind of like leaves me. Like the Telltale games right now. You know, I play like Sam and Max, and I can't finish those games. Like, I see where the brilliance is and how well done the games are in terms of how they're made, but they can never hold me, like, they can never hold my attention. And this game does it. You know, it does it as well as the Full Throttles and Quest for Glory and King's Quest. Like, I can play those games and not, but there are other ones that, I mean, like, Police Quest couldn't really finish those, or Freddy Farkas, Frontier Pharmacist, couldn't finish that. Like,
oh, dude, I totally forgot about that game.
And
Willie Beamish.
Willie Beamish, yeah, like The Dig. Even though that was they came right off of off of Full Throttle and did The Dig, and I just could not hold my attention. But you know, Gemini Rue is not like that. So, but it's great. People who watch the stream at first, they're like, oh, this is kind of slow to start. And well, yeah, it's an adventure game. It's going to be slow to start. But the things they add with, like, the combat, the gunplay combat, which is pretty much a cover-based combat feature, it's really refreshing. And it's almost placed perfectly within the chapters to where it's not, oh, another combat mission. You know, it's nice and spaced out. So, like, it keeps that flow going really, really well. And they add some really cool moments where, like, you're trying to escort a person, but they really, really can't die, so it's not truly an escort mission. But just based on the story, you're escorting someone through, so you're trying to shoot guys off and everything, and they're gaining on you, and you close yourself into a room, and you have to open a locked door somehow, and you could use the other guy to open a locked door. You can try to unlock the door, but this whole time it's kind of timed because the guys are busting down the door that you just closed. So if you get caught, you get killed, and it's just great. And they for a point and click adventure game, they're not really historically not too good at having those really intense moments. Like Full Throttle had some really cool intense moments, and that's one of the few games that for me was able to do that for me, like making me like, wow, I cannot believe that just happened. And Gemini Rue delivers some really, really good set pieces there. And one of my favorite things about it, and when we were doing the stream, that I really made it a point to prove, I actually died on purpose because I wanted to show the people
that you could die,
that you can die. So they follow that model of like King's Quest, where like they will kill you if you're not prepared, you didn't do the right things, they will kill you quick. But what's great about it, and one thing I wanted to show off, is in games of past where you died, you had to revert back to a previous save. That's the only thing you can do. And if you didn't have like 20 backed up saves, you're probably jumping back pretty far. This game, they'll kill you without a thought, but they're going to auto save and checkpoint you, you know, 10, 20 seconds behind where you died at. So they add some accessibility that we gamers that are used to, we're used to receiving now, and even people who haven't even, not even, you know, they were too young to really get into like King's Quest and Police Quest and whatnot, that this would be one of their first little forays into the genre, that'll keep them interested because they're used to games with really, really, really easy checkpoints. And this gives that too. So there's some accessibility there as well. But the story's great. They do a lot of cool things with like the dual characters. Like once you get into the second chapter, you can swap characters on your own. So like even if you're in the middle of doing something with Asriel, you can click on the top right portion of the screen that shows the little icon for Delta 6, and you can go right into Delta 6 whenever you want. And whenever they're done with that part in that chapter, then it automatically zips you back to Asriel. So like it's neat because it kind of like, I don't know, it kind of draws you closer to the characters because you can pick and play with them as much as you want. So I don't know. It's interesting how they do that. It's something I haven't seen in those games before.
Cool.
But yeah, Chris, I really think you should check it out as soon as possible. I like to talk about it more.
I'm going to.
Let's see. Xenogears. Play a little more Xenogears. I'm about the same place that Leo was last week when he said about 10, 12 hours into it. Just got into Kislev. I'm literally in the same exact spot. But I'm probably going to beat that game again pretty quickly. And then some newness, some new hotness that came out this week, Dragon Age 2.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah. Stone Cold bought that bitch.
What did you get it for?
PlayStation.
PC?
Okay.
I don't think my PC can run Dragon Age 2. I'm not really too sure. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to play something. I mean, I don't know. I like playing on the big boy TV. I'd rather play down there. It's good so far. It's different than Dragon Age 1, but yet it's not. Like the central core of Dragon Age, of what is Dragon Age, walking around, doing quests, you know, picking up loot, leveling up, all that stuff is kind of generally the same, but like, you know, the changes in combat are there, which for me personally, I enjoy the changes in combat. I've been hearing some iffy things from people. I'm not really feeling the changes and how they're doing. Like, you're constantly mashing buttons and everything. But to me, that's kind of my style. And I like that.
My problem with it isn't the fact that it's mashy buttons. It's that it's not one-to-one. It's like, you either go, like, hack and slash with your action, or you don't. I don't like... Because basically, even the first one is still hit A, kind of does the, it goes up the action, like KOTOR.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the same thing. It just does the action faster. So you're still not getting, like, it's not like every single time. Like, you can sit there and mash on A, but it's not going to attack. It's not like you hit A, it attacks, hit A, it attacks.
What class did you play?
Rogue.
Rogue? Yeah. Try out the mage.
Oh, really?
Plays way different than the other two classes. Way, way differently. And I'm sticking with the mage. It's awesome. Like, projectiles and just the way that it flows out, it does. It feels more one-to-one than you're playing with a fighter. It really does.
You have to try that out in the demo.
Yeah, it's really fun. I love playing with the mage. But presentation-wise, I like how the menus have like been kind of like streamlined. I guess more Mass Effect-y. And everything, because you have like the radial dials on your menu screen and everything, and it's really easy to understand. It's not cluttered whatsoever. And it added the map. Was there a map in the first Dragon Age? Did it have like an area? Yeah, I think there was. I think there was, because it looked more parchment. It looked like parchment. I think it did. Like, actually looked like a piece of map than an actual screen, I believe. I could be wrong. It's been forever since I played this game, but the mini map is like super, super tight in this game. Like, it's really easy to read. If they're like shopkeepers, they show them on there. If there are places to exit the map, they show them on there. Like, really, really, really nice mini map. Probably one of the best mini maps I've seen in a game. It's really nice. I was kind of down on how the game looked for the most part graphically. Like, there's some really shoddy textures, and
it doesn't look that good.
Yeah, like the characters look okay. I know on the PC they look better. But you can tell, aside from the two main, the male and female main character, and then the main dwarf, everyone else looks just kind of basic and okay.
Yeah.
Like clothes textures, like if it's not on the main character, the clothes look bad.
Yeah.
Like clothes, like your starting off clothes that they give you looks fine, but like random loot, like robes and everything. Like, I'm a mage, you want to wear robes because they give you more magic power, and they look terrible. They look like textures painted onto the character. It looks really, really bad. But the one thing I can say about the graphics are the environments. Like, the environments look really, really well. Kirkwall, the city that the game takes place in, looks fantastic. Just walking around and then looking up. And like the city towers over you. You don't even notice it until you look up, like at how massive these buildings are. But I really do like the environment and everything. Overall, the voices are really, really neat. The voice acting is pretty, pretty solid. You get a couple of returning cameos from people, and they got the original voice actors for that. The main character is pretty good. Kind of got a little bit of a Patrick Stewart thing going on a little bit. And I don't think his voice matches the character model very well. I don't know. It doesn't. It don't sometimes. The narrator is awesome too. And what's great is the guy who's a narrator is also a member of your party. So you get his great voice acting as much as he's in the party. And they do like that Dragon Age 1 thing that they did, where depending on what character, that is like some characters won't talk to each other very much in Dragon Age 1. Like, if you had like Alistair and Morgan, like they talked all the time.
All the time.
Well,
yeah.
It's that constant with every character. Every character I've had so far, I've just been mixing and matching characters just to hear them talk. Like, they really, really up the ante with the amount of things that these people have to say, and it's actually making me like each and every one of these characters so far, which I did not feel that way in Dragon Age 1. There are some characters where I thought were just like completely throwaway, and in this game so far I've gotten like 4 or 5 characters, and I love them all so far, just because they give you a reason to care for them via their spoken dialogue.
Really?
Yeah, I really liked it.
I felt the same way the first one. I didn't think there was one single throwaway character in the first one
really
at all. Yeah. I thought in terms of characterization, they did really, really good job. I'm not saying they didn't do that in a second. I haven't played the demo, but right. I'm looking forward to seeing what you say if you stick with it, because you like Dragon Age at first too, but then a couple weeks later you're like, yeah, I'm done with it.
Well, I was done with it because I think I'm past and really digging deep and enjoying kind of like that KOTOR type of play. I don't know. There's something about it that doesn't.
So basically, the combat is what didn't keep
you. Well,
yeah.
And what's great about this is that you can kind of play it the way you want to. I was watching some video documentaries and they were literally saying that you play it the way you want to. Like you can be a good guy or a bad guy, of course, like every game nowadays, but you can play it like an action game or you can play it like a strategy RPG. It's up to you. And I get a feeling of that because I've tried both. Like if I wanted to play strategy, I could step back and dish out orders. And then if I want to, I can just run into the thick of it and just start mashing away. And I kind of like playing like that, oddly enough. So that's going to, combat wise, that's going to keep me interested. So hopefully the story will be there and just run parallel with the combat and other gameplay, you know, facets that keep me in tune with this game so I can finish it. But I'm kind of concerned that you're going to spend like the entire game in kind of one place. I don't know how I feel about that because when you think RPG, I mean, every RPG you play, you're traveling the world. And with Dragon Age 1 being so epic, and then Dragon Age 2, they're saying they're still going to keep it epic, but you're kind of staying in one little province and in one city, and it doesn't seem that that's going to work hand in hand. I don't know.
I did read some reviews that one of the downsides is the environments get pretty repetitive, which says to me you're probably in the same areas back and forth quite a bit. So, yeah, I don't...
Yeah,
so find out. How many hours into it are you?
4 or 5.
Oh, okay.
4 or 5. Been playing it the last couple of days. I like it. It's good so far. It's got me. I am 4 or 5 hours into it. I am more interested and into this title and probably more apt to play it more than I was at this time with Dragon Age Origins.
The first one?
Yeah, I think so. Because I spent the first 4 or 5 hours in Dragon Age Origins just playing the different origins.
Okay. Yeah,
I love those. Like those. I love almost every single origin. With the exception of a couple, but it's further into the game, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of bored. Now, I'm sad that I didn't play all of it to where because I know I'm going to be missing out on some, like, winks and nods here from some characters and whatnot, but regardless, it's not. And you can import your previous save game over, but I don't think you're really importing that much stuff over.
No, because, I don't think
you're
really.
Yeah, because the developers were talking about Mass Effect, they really, really stressed about the import. Like, oh, you're going to import thousands.
Oh, yeah, because the character carried over.
Yeah, but the import option, it seems like it's kind of like, not throwaway, but just kind of like they're keeping it in the background. They don't want to talk about it very much.
Well, yeah, because kind of when they announced Dragon Age 1, they kind of said the same thing about Mass Effect, that you would be able to carry it over. Then when Dragon Age came out, they were like, so this is going to happen? They were kind of like, we don't know yet.
Yeah, the import does seem kind of tacked on. Like, oh, we got to do it now. So
yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all I've been playing, really. Nothing much else. Chris.
Okay, cool. Well, we talked about Hardcore a little bit already, Marvel vs. Capcom, Gemini Rue, which we played on the stream yesterday. We played some Mortal Kombat on the stream yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That shit was awesome.
Shit was fun and not serious at all. It's like, it's just like, you can't sit down and play Mortal Kombat and take it nearly as seriously as something like Street Fighter. You know, you just can't do it. I can't anyway, so.
Yeah.
But you know, it's old school Mortal Kombat. That's a good thing though. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, a lot of people were saying in the stream that that it looked like they went back to what worked with Mortal Kombat back from when, you know, they did 3, and after 3, it kind of just kind of fell off the map. And, you know, I think this one's going to bring it back. That's pretty cool.
I don't know. A lot of things in the stream worried me about the game.
Like
quite
what?
A few. It looks too much like old school Mortal Kombat. Like the one thing that I think, well, a lot of fighting game fans, like, everyone seems to like Mortal Kombat, but to a certain extent. Like you said, no one really takes it super seriously.
Right.
And mainly because, to me, looking back, the novelty of that game was fatalities and the specials. Because everyone's normal moves are exactly the same.
Yeah, there's no difference in the normals.
Yeah, so basically the diversity, like the space it leaves the players to kind of come up with their own play style and things like that aren't as big as, say, like a Street Fighter or Marvel series or even... like Tekken or Soul Calibur, because again, even when you guys pull up the command list, you can still see the dial of combos in there.
Yeah.
And if you basically they're kind of like pre-programmed. And I know, like, if you can look at videos even of old Mortal Kombat, people like stringing together different things like juggle moves, stuff like that. It's possible, but just not even close to the same level. And nothing in the demo. Like I said, I didn't play it yet. I'll have to wait until next week. But really screamed to me that this is going to be any different than the other ones in regards to those things. Like, I know they added in enhancements,
and that's the thing. It's not really, it's not any different. It's this, it's Mortal Kombat 3 and like a new, with a new coat of paint and, you know, some additional features.
Right. Well, we are, to be fair though, we are playing a demo for the first time ever. And we did see some signs of, what would be in like enhanced moves and like
kind of
advanced
mention,
like, combos and everything. Yeah. So it remains to be seen how are those tacked on, or are these going to be like main features that you're going to have to utilize to be really successful in this title. That's the question, because I know for a fact, and this, you guys probably do not feel the same way, but I was kind of getting like a little bit of a, okay, they are trying to go this tournament route, making it more like little Street Fighter-ish, because with the addition of those, the bone breaking moves, you can chain those into those special moves. Like, you can like do like a 3-hit combo and then boom, chain into that bone breaking move. That's kind of like your super, because it takes off like massive damage.
Massive
damage. So like you chain that, because I was doing basic stuff, like instead of my uppercut after Scorpion's spear, I would just go straight into the super. But I'm sure you can do like a good quick 2-3-hit combo and then run into it, and then you're looking at like what, 7 or 8-hit combo for over half their life.
For sure, but making a tournament play is not combos and how many things. Well, it's how diverse the gameplay can be in the characters. That's what makes it like a tournament game fun to watch and fun for players to take part in.
Right.
Like if it's going to just be, and also those bone moves, again, like look to me again, this is based on the demo. So like, I'm still going to get the game day one, so I'll be able to figure all this stuff out for myself. But all those bone crush moves seem to be the exact same, no matter like, not per character. Like, each character had their certain version.
Yeah. Each character has their version of the bone crushing moves, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And Jason made a comment in the thread or email thing today that it looks like they can be used different ways, which is cool. Like, he thought maybe the Johnny Cage one is used as like more of like a counter, and like Molina's is more like an offensive kind of type thing, which I think that would be huge for it, something like that, especially in regards to tournament play.
Right.
But like, it will be, I think, especially because of fighting games being right back in the thick of things now, like in the spotlight, I wouldn't be surprised if they do throw this in Evo or something like that, or like a big tournament like setup, but I don't know if it'll last that long. Like, I would say the same thing with Marvel's Capcom 3, because there's a lot of people aren't really happy with it in the tournament scene, and who knows, and they're pushing it big time for Evo this year. Like, it's gonna be probably the main game that they're playing.
Right.
Well, I'm not gonna compare the two necessarily, but I mean, like Marvel's Capcom does have that, you know, that feeling that not necessarily everybody has the same normals.
Well,
but you can combo together most of the same normals. Like,
the basic Magic series, yes, but then every other character still plays completely different based on their normals and the way their specials are linked together. Like, everyone will have the basic stuff, but the thing with Mortal Kombat, the thing that to me hurt in the past is everybody had the same, like, you could pick up...
They're all just palette swaps with different...
Yeah, that's basically that's really what it seemed like, with different special moves, and that's... But this is, I'm not going to lie, this is the most excited I've been for Mortal Kombat since Mortal Kombat 3. Like, I do think it looks awesome. It looks like it plays just like the old ones, which is good and bad. I just don't think a lot of people are hyping it up to be like, Mortal Kombat is back. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be really popular again. It's going to be thrown right into the tournament mix. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think as a face value Mortal Kombat game, like, we're going to have fun with this, beat the shit out of each other, show a fatality. Cool. Let's pick another character and mess around, you know, the same kind of thing. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be awesome.
I really want the full game though, because I'm really looking forward to a lot of stuff they're adding to just, you know, aside from versus mode, like a lot of things like the challenge ladder that they're doing where, like, you know,
yeah, that looks cool.
Like the armless fighting where you can only do kicks and whatnot. Like a lot of that, it's the nice quick one shot things. You move up the ladder and everything, but that's like over 300 or something like that. Like,
yeah, there's a ton
challenges.
Of them. Yeah.
It's so much replayability. Yeah,
apparently you get something really cool if you beat if you do the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, they're even, what were we talking about yesterday, Chris? Like how there's four player team battles.
Where there, yeah, there was two like separate two people. On two thing.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Was there. I don't know how that works, but
that would be fun.
Yeah,
that would
I'm
be
interested
really
to hear
fun.
What they do with that.
I'm pretty yeah. sure there's I think pretty sure it's sort of like a Marvel versus like or Tatsunoko versus Capcom type thing, like tag team sort of stuff.
Exactly.
I've definitely
yeah.
seen videos of like you're in a combo, then the partner comes in as like an assist type thing to hit them or keep them juggled, and then the other character keeps it going, whatever. And so that wasn't playable, I guess, on the demo. They just had it as an option.
Like, yeah, it was. It, grayed you could out. See it as the option, but it was yeah. grayed out.
Because
yeah.
that'd be really cool if you can do tag team like online or locally, like literally have like one person, like you two are on a team, Jason and I are on a team, and like tag team in there. That'd be really really cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, I may be setting myself up for like for a fall or something, but like I am like super set for this game. I want this game day one, no reservations. I need this game.
You mean you need a reservation?
Yeah, yeah. So you probably want to reserve it. Yeah,
that was horrible. That was horrible.
Oh my god!
No, I am definitely excited
yeah.
for it.
It's yeah, that, you gotta have it, and I gotta get the special edition, man. You gotta yeah. get that.
Oh, I'm gonna get the special edition too.
Oh, that's just awesome.
That, I'm just yeah, I'm just I guess looking at it a little bit more skeptical as I guess other people.
Yeah, and I'm just I don't have that. Yeah. I don't have that at all. You know, real quick before we leave that Mortal Kombat tip, like. I think it's good to say that during the stream when we were playing it, we met Clockwork, listener of the show, and met him. And he has a mean Melina, a very mean Melina.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he was whooping some ass with her, actually.
Well, until I brought Scorpion in the house.
Before your eighth glass of wine.
Before my eighth glass of wine. I blame Chris because he stopped drinking wine and he started drinking other
Dude,
stuff.
Dude, I still went through almost half that bottle with you, man. Because I was a glass ahead of you before I switched to beer.
I didn't know you stopped. So I thought we were sharing the whole thing. I'm like, hey, Chris, look what we finished. And I'm like, oh, shit.
I think you had like one more glass of wine than I did.
No, but I'm a little guy. I'm baby bear. Baby bear doesn't need that much honey.
God.
Alrighty then. Okay, so what else? I don't know what else I've been playing.
Radiant Historia.
I finally got Radiant Historia in. I don't want to talk about it yet because I literally just got to chapter one, so I really haven't played it enough to really make a lot of good conclusions about it. Mm-hmm. All I know is that the combat is really cool.
Yes.
I really, really enjoy the combat, and that is something that, if the combat is strong, that's something that can keep me involved in a game. In an RPG throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As proof of the fact that I actually beat Final Fantasy 13, because the combat was good, but everything else fucking sucked. Anyway, that is it though. So
cool.
I'm gonna save some you know, Historia talk until next week. I wanna play it some more.
Cool.
So let's get on to some news.
This news segment brought to you by Interactive Distractions. Available where fine products are sold.
I only got one thing.
What do you want?
I don't know what you guys got.
Is it a cloudy day in Atlanta?
It is a cloudy day in the PS Plus world.
It's a cloudy day on my PlayStation.
Did you get it already?
Yes, I did.
I have to say, man, I really like this, the fact that they're doing this. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up is do you guys think that Microsoft is going to feel some sort of pressure to do something like this?
Yeah, for sure.
And
I think they'll do it. Like, I don't think there's no. They're charging. Yeah, they're still charging $50 a year or whatever, $60 a year.
$60 now.
And
yeah.
they're just gonna. It's just more ammunition. Like Microsoft will just be like, yeah, we'll throw it up there, and then they'll still stick it on gold, so to keep it. Like, well, now PlayStation or Sony charges this much for Plus, and you need this, so it'll give them more ammunition to charge $50 to $60 a year for Xbox Live Gold.
Yeah, and with all the Windows 7 bullshit commercials that they were like, where they're like pimping
stuff.
The cloud, even though it doesn't really make sense
Wasn't
the way
the
they're
cloud,
trying to use it.
Yeah.
You know, I have a feeling that they will do something with it, and it'll be included in gold. It's not going to be anything extra.
It'll just be
If they make it extra, they're stupid. So.
Well, they already upped the price at the beginning of the year, so it's
In November of last year, they upped the price $10, and you know, I don't know. But, you know, I love the idea. And you know, we knew that we were going to have the ability to have content like, or save games go from PS3 to NGP. We knew that was in the plans, but apparently the Xperia Play has that ability too.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, there's some some interesting thoughts there. It's like, what kind of games do you have for Xperia Play, you know, on this on this Android device that are going to be compatible with save games from the PS3?
Well, who knows? Maybe they don't even have any. Maybe they just know that it could be done and they're going to try
to incorporate it somehow. I think that's probably what it is for the most part. And I have a feeling that if there is anything, it's going to be like minis or something like that.
I was just saying, like, even something like if Gran Turismo, if they ever release something similar to Forza where you can like design your own car, like decals and like, you know, pimp out your ride, so to speak, and paint jobs. Yeah. That'd be something that would work on a phone, like a mobile device.
Yeah, I agree.
That'd be cool to, you know, have your save and be like, oh, cool, and then bring that to your PlayStation 3 or MGP or whatever.
That would be
kind of cool. I would want to clear up one little thing, though, because they did, I think the US blog said you save a game. It doesn't do it automatically, by the way. It's you got to basically, when you're saving a game,
you have to transfer it.
Yeah, you hit trial, you transfer into the cloud, basically, and then you can download that to whatever PS3. PS blog said that it takes 24 hours for you to be able to take that save and put it on another PS3 that wasn't the originator. European blog is actually saying, no, it's if the developer wants to lock the save for 24 hours, they can. So basically a game like Demon's Souls or something like that where the save is like locked to the system, you can't transfer it. That's the way it's going to work. You put it to the cloud, but then you have to wait 24 hours for it to be able to download it on another PS3. And I can see some kind of reasoning behind this because a lot of games like that, like a lot of the ones that are locked are usually role-playing games or some kind of game where online is persistent. And a good example of people taking advantage of this would have been Phantasy Star Online, Chris, for Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Is the amount of people that were duping items and stuff
that. Oh, yeah, because everything was saved on that little VMU.
Exactly.
And you can make multiple saves.
Exactly. And I mean, sure, 24 hours if someone still wanted to do that kind of stuff with these type of games, they could do it, but they just have to wait 24 hours. And if they screw up whatever, they have to wait another 24 hours. So it kind of makes sense. So it's still kind of keeping it secure to what the developers want, like to people not take take advantage of. But at the same time, it's still giving us the freedom to be like, hey, you know what? I don't see that as a big problem. I mean, if I'm playing a game like that, I'm not going to instantly be like, you know what? I feel like playing in my bedroom now, so I need it right this instant. I'll just be like, nah, I'll stop playing now and tomorrow, whatever. Play here or there or fucking at your house or whatever. Doesn't matter.
I don't know about – I thought that the whole 24-hour thing was only for locked saves, though.
That's what I just said.
Okay. My bad.
I said it. I was actually
reading the blog post right now, and I'm looking at the U.S. one, and it says all previous save data may be restored once per 24-hour period. I don't really see that as them saying that you have to wait 24 hours. You can just restore once every 24 hours.
So real quick, just so I can be sure, like for instance, like I can only play Demon's Souls upstairs in the man cave on the PlayStation here because that's what I originally had my save game files on. So every 24 hours, I can actually transfer that because it's copy protected and I can't transfer it over via flash drive. So now with the cloud, I can do it.
But you have to wait for that file. You would have to wait 24 hours apparently.
Yeah, that's what the European blog says. But Chris, you're saying now it says once per 24-hour period. So that kind of, who knows now? I guess we have to wait for an official word from Sony because either way.
Or try it tomorrow.
Yes, either
or
way.
Or try it tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So you can transfer back and forth. Which I think this is good, especially for us who travel around a lot with our games and stuff and have maybe have multiple consoles. Like I can see some people, I've already seen some people see like this is not that big of a deal. I think Plus was worth it beforehand or something that say I still don't think it's worth it. But this is the selling point, sorry, for me, and I'm probably going to sign up for PSN Plus now.
Yeah, I think it's really handy, and especially in the case where, like for us, where we're doing the stream every Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, if we're playing a game on my PS3, and we want to get to a certain point in the save file, then I can just put it up on the online save and grab it on Jason's PS3. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's big to me. I think it's definitely useful for what we do, I think.
Exactly.
I have a feeling that there's a lot of people that don't necessarily need it, but, you know, it's still a cool ass feature to have.
And even if you don't have multiple, save your shit on there because if your system were to, like, yellow light or something, you have that
saved.
You
can grab it all.
I think there's a limit. I think it's 150 megs is it every person has.
150 megs and 1,000 save files.
Yeah, which is a lot for save games. So it seems small, but people should be fine.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean I really like the idea of having a cross platform, you know, saving where you can actually get to that stuff on NGP too. So
that's awesome.
I hope they do that. That would be really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
as long as they don't charge you an arm and a leg for both games.
Right.
Should be like, hey, yeah, here is Uncharted 4 or whatever the fuck it is, and you can pay $60 for the PS3 version, or you can pay like $70 or $80 for both.
For both.
Yeah. I would do that. I think that is a good idea.
Me too.
That's all I had for news, though, guys. So, Travis, anything else you guys want to bring up?
I did not. Jeff, I know you had something.
Yeah, it's not really news, and people know about it already, but it was brought to our attention, I guess, this week, but the game Moondiver by Square.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Yes, thank you so much. I had multiple people like tweet me and stuff like that. Oh, my God, you got to check this out, because I am a huge Strider fan. I've been longing for a Strider sequel or remake or anything to do with Strider for like the last decade, really. And people have been listening to the show know I mentioned at least, like, I don't know, a few times a year. It's at like been in every one of my wish lists. But yeah, it's made, this game's actually made by the creator of Strider, the arcade version, which is the best version. And it's coming to PSN and Xbox Live Arcade on April, end of April.
Actually, I heard it was end of March. I think it's March 29th.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I don't know why I keep putting April in my head. But yeah, sorry, it's end of this month. So March 29th, it's releasing on PSN. And it's they even say it's a spiritual successor to the Strider games. And it looks cool. It's four-player co-op. The levels look very Strider-esque. But someone brought to my attention, actually, it was Captain Harlock, that some of the levels might look like they're kind of arena-based, and I guess it kind of makes sense if it's co-op. Like, you go into an arena, you have to fight a bunch of enemies kind of thing and maybe kind of move on. But it looks like there's kind of some co-op mechanics involved, like with different kind of powers. Each character looks to be distinguished from each other. They're not simply palette-swapped characters.
Right,
like,
right.
They have different weapons.
Different sprites altogether.
Yeah, and they do look very square-ish type, like, style, I guess, kind of. Well, they, you know what kind of reminded me of, Chris, is because you said gameplay kind of looks like Contra, right? But I was going to say, even the art design of the main characters kind of look hardcore-ish.
Yeah.
With
yeah, I could see that. But I mean, it just seemed that what I was getting at is, and I know you could actually do this on Strider. It's just, it's been, you know, so long
forever
since I played Strider. It's just like when they were jumping around and clinging onto walls and shit like that, uh-huh, and you can do that in hardcore now.
Yeah.
And even though you could do it in Strider before, it just kind of reminded me of Hardcore because that's the most recent game that I've played
that you've been able to do it.
Does it. So.
Yeah. But it does look cool. It is 2.5D, though. It looks like it's all 3D sprites, but
models. Yeah.
Models, yeah, and stuff. Models. Yeah. But it looks definitely cool, and I'm so happy people pointed that out to us because I am pumped for it. And yeah, the fact that it's coming in a couple weeks even has me more pumped for it.
Yeah, welcome to play some co-op on that. That'd be fun.
Oh, hell
thank
yeah.
Thank you, Strider 2K99, for bringing that up to us.
He was the first one to throw it up there. Yeah.
So I have a feeling that's going to be an Industream game right there.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Hey, guys, let's take a break.
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk to the guys for that behind Gemini Rue. That's going to be interesting. And then we're going to do some new releases, listener email, and a new question of the week. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
It's time to wake up.
What up, eh? This is the Canadian Moose that runs Jeff Cherney's internet, and you're listening to Interactive Distractions. I may be slow, but don't blame me if you can't work the fucking mute button.
And welcome back.
You're welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Today we have a very, very two very special guests. We have the creators of Gemini Rue, the point and click adventure game that you guys saw on last week's Indie Stream. Joining us today is Joshua Nurenberger and Dave Gilbert of Wajid Eye Games. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks.
Good. Thank you.
Why don't you guys give us a little idea of what you do at Wajid Eye Games and your company? I mean, I know you guys have a long history before Gemini Rue, so why don't you give us kind of a rundown of Wajid Eye Games and why we should be paying attention to you.
I guess I'll go first, and then I'll hand it over to Josh. About Wajid Eye specifically, I started the company back in 2006. I was kind of in between jobs, and I've been making games for fun as a hobby for several years. And I had some money saved up, and I decided, hey, why not? And I started selling them just kind of as a way to avoid getting a real job. And 5 years later, I'm kind of still doing that. So I released my first game was called The Shiva, which was a murder mystery starring a rabbi, and followed up by the Blackwell series, which is about a medium and a spirit guide investigating ghosts in New York. And there's three of them out. One's coming out in a few months. And I started publishing other games a couple of years ago. I started with Aaron Robinson's Puzzle Bots, which were released last year. And this year we released Josh's Gemini Rue. So Josh developed that. I had nothing to do with the design or the development. I was just the guy who published it.
That's cool. Josh, how about you, man?
Yes, so my involvement with Dave and Wajidai was very recent. So basically, I'd been working on Gemini Rue, which used to be called Boryokuden Rue. Try pronouncing that three times fast. For about 3 years, and then I decided I wanted to go commercial with it. And I'd always known of Dave's works. He was very active in the AGS community, which is Adventure Game Studio. That's the engine that we use for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I always knew of his stuff, and like he said, in 2009, he published Puzzle Bots, which was by Aaron Robinson. So he was kind of pushing, like trying to get other people's adventure games out on the market. So when I wanted to make the jump to commercial, I was like, Dave's the perfect guy to do it. He knows the ropes, he knows adventure games, and he knows how to publish it. So during 2010, after GDC, I also met him there. We just started talking together, and over the summer, I decided to sign on with him, and we've just been working together, and we finally got the game published.
Cool, and we love it. I mean, we were messing around with it yesterday on the stream, and we were just having a blast with it. So, I mean, we did only get to do the demo on the stream because the video feed was messed up for some reason, but everyone seemed to be digging it, man. So, you know, we're pretty excited to have you guys on, and we appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join us.
You seem disappointed with the demo ended, which is always what you want from a demo. So
yeah, pretty much, yes.
I guess the demo worked.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like it. Travis is like, okay, we're about to get to some combat, and then the demo ends, and I'm like, no.
Just so. There was totally my wife's idea. She just wants everyone to know that.
Okay, so blame her. Okay, I got you. Well, cool. Well, I'm gonna pass the show off to Travis.
Yep.
And let's talk about Gemini Rue, man. I'm excited.
Okay, well, I started off. I was kind of teasing the guys in the chat earlier. I had a little icebreaker before we got really to the meat of the questions, the real hard, dirty questions. But I have a couple of quotes or a few quotes for you guys that I got from some reviews. Here's one. Most adventure gaming devotees love nothing more than a slip on their unauthorized commemorative Grim Fandango t-shirts, sigh longingly, and bemoan the fact that the genre is as dead and buried as the game's skeleton protagonist. Another quote, Gemini Rue breathes new life in a once dead genre. And a final quote, in this new era, where point-and-click adventure games are an afterthought, it's refreshing to see developers willing to keep games like Gemini Rue coming. So, seeing those quotes from reviews, how does it feel, guys, to single-handedly save the genre itself? I mean, you brought it from the grave. You resurrected the point-and-click adventure.
Well, what's funny is that I've been making these old-school point-and-click adventure games for 5 years, and with every game I do, there's always at least 10 or 20 reviews that always talk about how adventure games are dead and, oh my God, someone's making one. And this happened with Time Gentleman, Please. It happened with Diamonds in the Rough. Any indie person besides, you know, any adventure game that comes out besides something made by Telltale is always this big, oh my God, someone's making adventure games again.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know if people just don't pay attention or what, but I think it's in a way, I think it's the whole adventure games being dead thing, or at least in terms of big AAA companies making huge adventure games like they did back in the day, mid-late 90s. I think that is a little bit dead. It's not really a marketable thing to make a game at that level anymore, but it creates a great opportunity for indies like Josh and like myself, because when the big companies ignore a market, that creates the opportunity for indies to step in and kind of fill that niche.
Right.
And like, I would not want to be competing with LucasArts, you know, back in the early 90s.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Right now, you know, there's you know, there's Telltale and there's the new Jane Jensen game, and you know, there's certainly games coming out, but it's not nearly as many. So there's room for everyone. So I don't know if we single-handedly brought back the genre, but it's certainly nice to be part of that legacy, as it were. And yeah, that's how I see it.
Now, right. Just to be clear, all of the games that you've published under Wagenai, they are all point-and-click adventure games. Is that correct?
Yes, PuzzleBots is a little bit more puzzle than adventure game, but it's okay. Definitely got a point-and-click kind of flavor to it.
Okay, that is really cool. I mean, I'm actually on your website right now, and there's a good 10, 12 games here, so that's pretty cool.
Quite a few.
I do like the Adventures of Fat Man down at the bottom under recommended games.
Oh yeah, that was actually the very first. If there was any Trailblazer game, that was the very first independently, you know, amateur, you know, maybe with an adventure game studio game that came out commercially. That was the very, very first one. So when I, a couple of years ago, I decided to start trying to sell other indie adventure games on my website, I emailed Michael Doak, who created the game, and I'm like, dude, you know, I know you're not selling this anymore. Can I sell it? And he said, sure. So I do.
We'll have to, Travis, we're going to have to show this to, show this particular one to Jason, because I think he would appreciate it quite a bit.
Probably so.
He's a huge Batman fan. Yes. Like, the biggest Batman fan I know, so it'd be entertaining to see his take.
Cool. Well, Josh, how many people worked on Gemini Rue specifically? Was it just you, or did you have any help?
Good question. So I started the project in 2008 by myself. I was doing like everything on it, and then I needed a lot of help on music and sound. That is not my area of expertise at all. So I was just kind of scouring the internet forums for help, and a guy called Nathan Allen Pennard was offering his work, and I listened to it, and it was really good. So he signed on. So since then, it was me, him, and then when Dave joined the project, he joined with a whole cast of voice actors, and then just the beta team after that.
All right, right. So, what? Going back to the beginning, like in the concept stages of Gemini Rue, what were some of the major influences starting off? Because you hear a lot of Blade Runner, you hear a lot of that, but I'm aesthetically, it's there. But is Blade Runner really a key influence on that? Because at first, it's there, but as I play the game, I start to see it's not, in a way.
Yeah, that's a good point. The two main things that people bring up whenever I see Gemini Rue mentioned are, first, Blade Runner, and second, Beneath a Steel Sky,
right.
Which is funny because I don't consider those the primary influences at all. I think people just have this kind of nostalgic, like, I don't know, correlation that goes on in their head automatically. But yeah, the main references or inspirations, I would say, are actually Cowboy Bebop, the anime, and Portal, the video game.
Oh, okay. And you see that in Delta Six's story a lot. You really see like a lot of that influence as well. Well, a lot of the white kind of contained area. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. But also, in the same sense, that whole sterile, like white everywhere setting mm-hmm. is really kind of a overused cliche almost of the sci-fi genre.
And you touched on the music. You touched on the music a little bit. What was it about that score? Because that really grabbed you.
Yeah, so he had like a demo reel on his site, as all artists do. His whole kind of feel and atmosphere that came from his music was just like of a totally different caliber than a lot of other indie game soundtracks. Like a lot of other people, you might listen to it and you're like, yeah, this is an indie game soundtrack. It's got all the bleeps and bloops and the right. little 8-bit stuff. But he really managed to capture that kind of professional feel, which added onto the retro pixelated aesthetic of the game, kind of adds a new dimension to it.
Now, I actually had a question about that aesthetic. I mean, you said that you did most of the stuff on your own. Did you do all of the, like, all the sprite work and all the visuals as well?
I did, yeah.
That is pretty. So, I'm a programmer. So, finding a programmer that actually has some artistic skill is always baffling to me, because I'd have zero. I would be lucky to draw a straight line with a ruler. Seriously, it's that bad. So
he's not lying.
Yeah, it's cool to see that. It's cool to see that.
Yeah, thanks. But I'd actually consider myself more of the opposite, like an artist with programming skills.
Okay, well, that's probably the better way to go if you're going to be an independent game developer.
What I really enjoyed about the score, I had just watched The Social Network, and the score, especially in the beginning of the game, there's like those piano tones that are playing. It's very similar than what what's his face from Nine Inch Nails just won the Oscar for
Trent Reznor.
Yeah, just won the Oscar for best score in the movie. Mm-hmm. But pretty much the entire score is nothing but tones, like from the piano, and it's a brilliant soundtrack. And when I hear it in the game, it's like, oh, that sounds a lot like what is in that movie, and it works really for the genre and for the game itself. It really sets a nice little mood. Now the game wasn't originally called Gemini Rue. You had touched on that before. It was a Boryokuden Rue. So why the change?
I think I can answer that. Or maybe yeah. Josh can.
Go ahead.
I'll go for it.
Sure.
When Josh first approached me with the game, me and my wife sat down, we played it, and we absolutely loved it, but we realized we could never remember what it was called.
Yeah.
We kept calling it like a Boryokuden, we just could not get the name of the game down, and we were pronouncing it. It turned out we were pronouncing it completely wrong. Josh had to send us a sound file showing us how it was pronounced, and we were completely off. And we realized very quickly, like, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, quote, that publisher who kind of elbows his ideas into someone else's vision. But right. I just couldn't deny that this would be a big obstacle. Like, I didn't know how to spell it. I didn't know how to pronounce it. And we actually, again, this was my wife's idea. She came up with the name Gemini because it takes place in the Gemini galaxy. And it deals with duality. You have two characters and issues with identity and things like that. And so Gemini seemed like a very good idea. And since everyone, when it was called Boryokuden Rue, everyone remembered the Rue. No right. one remembered the Boryokuden, but everyone remembered the Rue. And so with, hey, Gemini Rue, that works. And then I just kind of very cautiously approached Josh, and I'm like, so how do you feel about changing the name? Kind of like, if he was against it, I would have been okay, but he was totally cool with the idea. So we changed the name just for purely, you know, practical reasons. And you know, some people, of course, prefer the old one. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Some people prefer, a lot of people actually, they prefer the old one, but they can't deny, you know, they totally understand why we had to do it.
Where did you get the name Boryokuden from? Because, like, when you're playing the game, like, you know, it's very, not basic dialogue, but it's normal dialogue, and you're reading, and all of a sudden Boryokuden pops up, and you're like, what is that? Like, where did that name come from?
Yeah, so, like, I was trying to come up with a lot of the mythos for the world, you know, and originally they were just called the Syndicate, you know, it's like... Right. We have to escape from the Syndicate, or the Syndicate is coming after us. But then immediately that just kind of conjures up images of very stereotypical anime or sci-fi noir. So I thought, how can I kind of put a spin on this, like, to kind of refresh it a little bit? So I started to look up other alternative words for, like, mafia, etc. And I went to the best place for inspiration, which is Google Translator. and I put in the word mafia, and I translated it a bunch of different ways, and I ended up with a Japanese translation, which is Boryokuden. So that's how it came to be.
Nice.
Cool.
Maybe Dave can answer this question. When you were thinking about how to sell this game, now when you're looking at, like, especially in the adventure genre, it's all episodic. Like Telltale, everything's episodic. You're never going to get a one shot from them. It's going to be constant, you know, droves of games under one title. So, did you even think about selling this game episodically instead of one complete experience?
Well. That was impossible for one thing, because Josh basically handed me the game gift wrapped. It was almost, it was like 90% complete. All it needed was the voice acting and some QA and the talking portraits. We also updated.
Right.
So chopping it up and releasing it episodically would have been a stupid idea. Do you mean releasing other installments of the story, or actually chopping that game up and releasing it episodically?
That probably could lead into a question we're going to have towards the end of the interview, but still. Not chopping the core story you have right now into other ones, but like just plainly episodic and everything.
Back to the Future is doing now. Like, the game is technically kind of complete, and kind of like the Sam and Max games, they'll do like a few chapters, like maybe an hour or two of gameplay, release that, even if they have more than that done, just to kind of, I guess, spread it out.
Well, I've the Blackwell series is episodic, and Okay. The one thing I've realized about episodic games is that you have to have, even though there's a continuing story arc, the actual episode has to have a definite ending.
Right.
Otherwise you just frustrate people, you know, and just you're in the middle of doing something. Oh, to be continued. You're like, what? Mm-hmm. But nothing was resolved. Or
kind of like something... us with the demo last night.
Yeah. Well, that's the tease. That's
yes.
The tease.
Yes.
That worked very well. I just I want to reiterate that once again.
Like I said, my wife's idea. It worked. I never even thought of releasing this game, chopping it up and releasing it episodically, just because it was such a complete experience in and of itself. And why you know, stretch it out? And if I don't have to, it was just really perfect as it was.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you're making another, you know, you said that the Blackwell series was kind of episodic. You said you're making another episode of that. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
That is cool. I'm going to pimp this right now because I think it's all cool right. That you have the bundle on of the three games that you've got out right now for $20 on your website.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's it's on the website, whyjedigames.com.
All right, so this is one of the things that we touched on, and again, why we were so shocked that the demo ended right there was because we really wanted to get to the combat. We wanted to show our viewers what that was, because it's very, very rare, and something that we talked about in the beginning of the stream when we're talking about some of our favorite adventure games. One that Chris and I both brought up was Heroes Quest, or also known as Quest for Glory. And what made Quest for Glory so great, and to this day, my favorite series in the adventure genre, was the fact that, you know, you had your awesome point-and-click adventure stuff, but you also jumped into some combat. And, of course, it was different in every game, and some games had it better. But with Jim and I, Rue, you're bringing back combat into this genre, but gunplay at that. And that's something I personally have never experienced, and you don't see it a lot. And what was that intention to always have that gunplay combat when you were creating the game?
Yeah, like from the initial design document, I always intended to have it, and it's also a core part of the story. I don't know how far you guys have got or if you've completed it, but the whole idea is that Azrael used to be an assassin, so he's supposed to be, you know, like good with guns and everything. And also at the same time, Delta 6 is being trained for some nefarious purpose, and it kind of made sense within the story and the gameplay to kind of incorporate the combat. And just an analogy to this, I was playing Full Throttle for the first time, and in Full Throttle, they really want to, you know, capture that biker experience.
Right.
So I never actually knew the game had combat in it and these sections where you drive along open highways, and I was like, wow, this combat really makes you feel tough, you know, even though some people might hate it because it's an adventure game. But still, the whole idea behind it adds to the thematic of, I'm a biker, I'm beating people up. So to have the combat also in Gemini Rue, it just reinforces the idea, yes, I'm an assassin, yes, I can kill people, instead of just use keys on doors, you know?
Right. So the and it's so funny because, like, in normal console games that you see today are so, like, oversaturated with, like, cover-based shooters, and it's just so funny to see this game, but it's basically a cover-based shooter, but it's in the adventure format, and it's really, really fun to see that, and it's really fun to play, too. So how long did it take to develop the game altogether? You said 2008 it started?
Yeah, it started in January of 2008. I would say it took about 8 months, actually, to get kind of a skeleton build. Like, you could play it from beginning to end, but it was really, really rough. But then I spent about the next year polishing it, and that was the build I sent to the Independent Games Festival. And then after that, it was just more polish, and then working with Dave to get the voice acting and other little features in.
Well, okay, you mentioned IGF and everything. So you got some recognition there. So go ahead and toot your own horn. Like, so what happened with IGF?
Yeah, so I was working on somebody else's project during summer of 2009,
right.
And he was going to submit it to IGF, and I had never heard of it previously. So I figured, hey, why not? I can submit to IGF, and I went onto the site, and I found out, hey, wait, it costs money to send your game in, and I was like, oh, that's a turnoff. But luckily, they had a student category, and I happened to be in college, so I just entered my game in, not thinking much of it. Mm-hmm. Then in January, I got an email saying, hey, you're a finalist. Come to San Francisco and GDC and exhibit your game. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff.
What kind of reception did you get there when people were... So is it like a show floor and people were stepping up and playing the game a little
bit? Yeah.
What were they saying there?
Yeah, it was really great. Usually when people walked up to me, the first thing they said was, hey, I love these games. I don't see them anymore. I thought they were dead.
So, yeah. Everyone
seems
says
to be
that.
A running theme right now.
Yeah, well, so it was pretty good response there.
Well, good. Good. Now, this genre, I think it's fair to say that this can be viewed as retro, because we're looking at a couple of generations back.
Extremely retro.
What are some difficulties that you faced when creating this title, aside from the fact that you're pretty much a one-man squad for the first half of its development?
Good question. Not sure I have a straight answer. So starting the game, I was building off my experience with my two previously released games, because I had actually been tinkering with the AGS engine for a long time, like 5+ years.
Right.
So by the time I started Gemini Rue, I had a pretty good idea of what the engine can do and a pretty good idea of what I was capable of doing. So whenever I start a new game, I always like make a prototype first, meaning I figure out all the features I want in the game, and then within like a week or two, figure out if those are actually possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I started that, and the first thing was basically the combat. So I figured out, can you do combat in AGS, because it's designed for adventure games?
Right.
But then once I got that working, I was like, okay, everything else is pretty much standard adventure games. So I just took off from there and worked on it whenever I had free time.
Okay, cool. Well, one of the other things we touched on, the voiceovers. And Dave, you said you oversaw a lot of the voiceover?
Yeah. I have not so big, but I have a steady crew of voice actors that I work with most of my games. Gemini Rue actually had a really big voice cast, so it kind of...
Right.
It kind of increased my roster quite extensively. The biggest challenge with Gemini Rue was that normally with my other games, the characters usually have a lot of things to say because there aren't as many characters. But in Gemini Rue, there were a lot of characters that would come on and say maybe 3 or 4 lines.
Right.
And that was actually a bigger challenge, because do I want to get one of my like really, really big actors, you know, like would come in and sit down and, you know, I would pay them, you know, $50 an hour to do it. Right. But I like how many, you know, like, do I really want to waste these guys on only 2 or 3 lines? And since so many characters had only 2 or 3 lines, I tended to get just a lot of just people who want to do voice acting for games. I got a lot of people to just chime in a couple of lines for. There was a character that I think I don't know, like a couple of scientists, things like that. I just had to scramble to find people because.
Right.
But it was an interesting experience working on this, because it was the first time I ever directed voice actors where the lines weren't my own. And sometimes we'd reach a line and they'd be like, so wait, what does he mean by this? And I'd look at it, I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
And we'd take a couple of guesses, or we'd try a couple of things. I think especially the last scene of the game, where there's so many different ways to read that last scene. I don't know if you've gotten to the end. I'm not going to give it away. But right. There's so many different ways we could have read that last scene that we did it like a bunch of different ways. And I sent all the different versions to Josh. I'm like, which one do you want? And even he had trouble choosing. But we ended up I think he actually wanted to change it later. Or I'm not sure. But it was definitely challenging. It was definitely interesting. And working with Brian Silliman as Azrael was such a trip. He's such a great actor. I've always wanted to work with him before. And so he was a lot of fun to work with.
So how many, give me some numbers. How many characters are there?
I don't know. I'm trying to think how many characters. There were about, I'm trying to do this out of my head. Josh?
They're about 15, yeah, 20. I don't know myself, but yeah, that's a good guess.
There are like 10 characters with a nice chunk of lines, maybe more, maybe yeah, 10 or 15. And then there's maybe another 10 or 15 characters with maybe 5 or 10 lines. some even more. Like the computer voice was, you know, she had like, that was like 300 lines. She would come in and do all of them. And there was some people like the, like was the mafia agents. I was one of the mafia agents. I was the one who shot Asriel on the stairs. And like that was easy just to sit down and do myself.
Right. I was going to sit there and ask, did you guys lend your voices in the game as kind of like a little Easter egg to yourself?
I did. I don't know, Josh, did you do any?
I neglected. I decided I already had way too much of myself in the game.
I was the I did one of the mafia agents. I was Kenneth, the guy whose arm was broken and threatens Asriel. I was
okay.
One of the scientists, and I don't know. I think I was someone else. I don't remember. The composer, Nathan Allen Pinard, he was one of the hotel receptionists, so he had a cameo as well.
Cool. Well, I really hope a lot of people really, with the stream and then this interview itself, really, really pick up Gemini Rue. We can't say enough about it. I'm almost done with the game, and I really can't wait to see what it looks like. So seeing that I'm so close to the game, my big question next is going to be, what's next for WaJedi? Is there going to be more, or plans in motion for possibly more Gemini Rue, or you guys want to head in another direction, or maybe even a completely different genre? What's next?
Well, I imagine that Josh is completely sick of it by now. I can't speak for him, obviously, right. But in terms of what I'm doing, there's another Blackwell game that we're doing, as I said. Probably going to do another adventure game after that. And my wife and I are working on kind of a bigger project. Our dream game and our big dream pie in the sky, like we really want to do, we've been wanting to do this for years kind of game, is a isometric role-playing game in the style of Fallout or Baldur's Gate. And it's cool. Something that my wife is building the technology for it, and that takes a long time. So in the meantime, we're making these adventure games, which are also my first love, and so we're not giving up on the adventure games by any means. But that's a dream that we really will hope to accomplish one day. So that's something you're going to see from us eventually.
That's refreshing, because I thought you were going to say your dream project was an Unreal 3 shooter. So good.
Time's well, so funny you mentioned not.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Can you talk about how you came up with what brought you to the name WaJedi?
Oh, I always keep saying if I could go back in time and change one thing, it would be the name of the company. When I was a kid, I was really into Egyptian mythology, and I thought the symbol of the WaJedi, which is the Eye of Horus, I just thought it was the coolest looking thing. And when I got older, I always thought, well, if I ever wanted a logo for anything, I would use the WaJedi. And then when I was making the first Blackwell game, I wanted to start promoting it, and I needed a website. In order to have a website, I needed to have a name for the company. And so I went on to the registration webpage. I'm like, what do I call the company? What do I call the company? And I thought, well, I know the WaJedi is going to be the logo, so I'll just call it WaJedi. And I just – at the time, I wasn't sure if this was going to be a really serious thing or not. But sure enough, 5 years later, you know, with like 7 games out, it's kind of a staple now. So it's too late to change it now. So that's where I came up with the name. Although
I was actually curious to know if it was actually an Egyptian mythology reference. That was why I asked. I was curious to hear about that. That's cool.
It definitely is.
I got a question more or less about the game, but you guys are obviously hardcore into the point and click or the adventure games. Do you guys thought of any ideas how to kind of break through to, I'd say, the last generation or so of gamers? Because I find one of the hardest things that adventure games have, like, it's basically an uphill battle to get the people to stop playing first-person shooters or even give adventure games a try. Because, I mean, a lot of people that love them are, of course, people like us who grew up with them. And have you guys thought of, like, any kind of, like, what it would take for these games to kind of get put in the spotlight again? Like, you guys mentioned Telltale, they're finally coming through with they just announced what, like 5 or 6 games a couple weeks ago,
something like that.
18 was the count in my
was it? Yeah, but the thing is, like, they got the one from, they have their Telltale, and they also have a lot of them are license based too. But basically, yeah, just like, if you guys thought about that, or any interest in kind of like getting the adventure name back out there, point and click, or
Well, it's interesting you mention that because I keep saying it, and Josh might not agree, so feel free to jump in and say no. But I think Gemini Rue has kind of done that in a weird way. I mean, it's number two on Metacritic in the PC game section.
Yep.
It's gotten much more play and mainstream exposure than any of my other games. This might be partly due it's the game I've given the most marketing push against. Like, I've actually have PR representation now, and she certainly helped a lot. And she used to work for Telltale, so she knows adventure games. But the interesting thing about Gemini Rue is that Josh, the fact that it was originally freeware kind of worked in its favor, because when I make a game, I am always thinking, like, this is my living, I have to get it out the door and I have to make some compromises. But since this was originally freeware, Josh didn't have that problem. He just made, you know, normally a bit like my way of thinking, you can't have an adventure game with combat. Josh is like, I don't care, I'll put combat in it. There were absolutely no compromises with the design, and he ended up with a game that, like, was 100% faithful to his vision, and it's, you know, no coincidence that it is doing exceptionally well sales wise. So it's you know, if you look on the sites that typically you know, rag on every game, if you look at the trailer on the Game Trailers website, the comments are usually brutal. With that, whatever ends up on Game Trailers, the comments are usually brutal, but they love Gemini Rue. Ars Technica, same thing, they love it there. The sites that usually rag on everything like Gemini Rue, and it's really quite amazing to see. I think it's because it's something that and again, like, I'm totally analyzing Josh's work, and maybe he should be talking about this, but it's just from an outsider looking into it, it's something that's very accessible. You look at it and you see something that you like. If you're a gamer or if you're a geek, you see Cowboy Bebop, you see Blade Runner, you see Beneath the Steel Sky, you see a lot of things that you like. So that draws you in. And once you're in, the game itself is very immersive and makes you, and it draws you in even further. So I think Gemini Rue has done it. I think it's a lot more mainstream than most adventure games have been in a while. Weirdly
enough. Far. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I was going to comment about on that is that, you know, it's funny that Jeff kind of pulls out, you know, how do you get the people away from, you know, cover-based shooters and things like that. But yet here we have Gemini Rue, which is this point-and-click adventure game that actually has, like, a cover-based shooter mechanic in it for the combat. So, I mean, it almost seems like Gemini Rue is it's almost like a bridge for those people to come over to the adventure genre, in my opinion, anyway.
Anyway, Josh, I'm sorry if I kind of analyze your game to death. Feel free to disagree. It is your game, after all.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. I think one thing that would really push adventure games more mainstream is not kind of restricting yourself to the molds of the genre, especially like the genre of 20 years ago, like core, puzzles, no action, all that stuff. So even Gemini Rue, like, it has combat elements in it. It has different types of elements going on. So if you wanted to push adventure games, I'd say don't stick to the nostalgic, like, game design of 20 years ago. Try to morph the best of adventure games into today's standards. Like, right. You can have adventure games in, yeah, first-person shooters, for example. Yeah.
That is a big something I always adhere to, is that nostalgia can only get you so far, and being slavishly loyal to the past and making lots of references to other games, which Gemini Rue has one or two little inside jokes, but nothing. He makes a trench coat joke at one point, and he does there's a couple of little small tiny references, but it's not like this big, you know, love letter to the past. It really does offer something new. And that, I always try to do that in my games as well, which is why I like Gemini Rue so much, because it's like, all right, you know, you build on what came before and add something of your own. And the graphics, while they do look retro, is just really, I mean, I'm sure if we both were able to and could afford it and had the technical know-how, we would have had, you know, 3D, you know, graphics ourselves. But we work with what we can.
Right.
Yeah.
That being said, it's a thought about possibly eventually maybe trying to move somewhere like Xbox Live or even the DS. Like, I know Nintendo is crazy with their licensing fees and stuff like that, but this is a type of game that I think would, like, I mean, adventure games are great for that kind of console. And I mean, I know you guys are independent right now, for the most part, but have you thought about that? Like,
or even Steam?
Yeah, or even Steam or something like that.
Steam, I get a lot of questions about Steam, and I'll answer that right now. Because it's not up to us whether it gets on Steam. It's up to Steam.
Yeah.
And Steam rejected Blackwell twice, actually. And they rejected PuzzleBots as well. But then when it made a splash at PAX East, they took it then. And so I don't want to give them any reason to reject Gemini Rue. And I think they rejected those other games because of the low resolution. That's kind of the impression I get. Right. And I since Gemini Rue is also low resolution, I want to gather up all the positive reviews and all the press and all the buzz and then be like, hey, check this out. I don't want to give them any excuse to say no. So I really – we're going to be submitting it to them after PAX next week. We're going to get all the reviews together and put our pitch together and send it to them. So cross your fingers. If they don't take it, I'm sure, you know, we can send out the word and they can – you know, people can spam their forums or whatever. But because people are really eager. They will not buy unless it's on Steam. It's wild.
That was a big question we were getting last night. Is this on Steam?
We'd love it to, but we don't want to – I don't want to jump the gun and have them reject it. So I want to wait a while, even though it's getting a lot of great reviews and press already. Like, we need more. So we're going to get all that and then submit another time.
And you are definitely going to be showing off the game at PAX, right?
No, unfortunately, it came out too late for that. We're just going to PAX as pure consumers. PAX Prime, PAX West, maybe. We can submit it there. And I don't know if Josh has the energy to do that or not. But I mean, it's something we haven't even talked about it. We released the game and we haven't even thought about like future showing for the game. I mean, right now it's doing so well right now. We're going to see where we can go from here.
Right. Well, a quick shameless plug for some of our friends of the show. When you're in PAX East, they're performing there. You need to go see the Proto Men perform at PAX East.
Oh, yeah. I saw them last year when I was
there. Did? Okay, great. Yeah. Good guys.
Yeah, they did a little show for us when we did Indus Fest last year. It was pretty fantastic.
So. Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah. You kind of touched on the Steam thing. What about like consoles or even like mobile platforms like iPhone or Android?
I get that question a lot too, and I'm sorry, I'm kind of bogarting Josh in terms of talking, but this is something I've done with a lot with porting to mobile devices. I always get the iPhone question about like, why don't you port it to the iPad or iPhone or
awesome.
Mobile devices? Yeah. But like Josh said, he's an artist with who can do a bit of programming. I am also like more of a designer who can do a bit of programming, and we both use a third party engine called Adventure Game Studio, which is kind of directly geared to these point and click adventure games.
Mm-hmm.
And they are rigidly PC only right now, which is a shame because we'd love to be able to port them. But if we did want to port, if we wanted to make a games for another platform, we'd have to make an engine for that platform in order to make a game to put on that platform, if that makes any sense. So we have to do a lot of work from scratch and a ton of work from scratch just to even make an engine. And then we'd have to make the game on top of that. The game itself, even at Adventure Game Studio, took Josh 3 years to make, let alone starting over putting it on another platform. And that would take, you know, time and money and energy to make. And it's also a risk because is there a market for it? Maybe. But is there enough of a market to justify charging the prices that, you know, the iPhone and all that charge? Like, they usually, it's typically like $1 or $2 for a game on that platform. And is there enough of a market to justify charging so little? I don't know. It's kind of a risk. Maybe someone will do it. But right now, unless someone says, hey, you know, I'll make this engine for you and I'll pay you to make an engine or we'll publish it for you. Unless someone does that, like, I don't want to take that risk because I have a lot more to lose. Like, I like being able to eat and pay my mortgage and stuff. So I don't want to risk, you know, the time and money doing that. I know it seems weird because that's kind of everyone considers that the moneymaker, while the PC downloadable is so yesterday, but that's proven for me. It works. It pays my bills. Like, I've been doing it for 5 years and shows no sign of slowing down. So I don't want to rock that boat because I like being able to do what I do and I don't want to go bankrupt. And I don't want to get a real job, guys. That's basically it.
To avoid it.
Yes.
Plague.
Do you guys have any advice for people that want to kind of get into the indie development scene?
Josh can start. I've talked too much.
I don't know about the commercial side of it, as far as just being indie for indie's sake. Just start making games. That's all I did. I mean, I just wanted to make games. I found a free engine, and I just did it whenever I could, and here I am today.
Famous.
Okay, that's cool.
I guess my
it's a very general answer. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, but in reality, it's
the most.
That's what you need, so.
That's what I did. I mean, I spent a long time like doing freeware games and kind of being unhappy in my office job and wondering, oh, gee, what should I do? What should I do? I mean, well, what did I go home and do every day? I made games for fun. And then when I finally took the plunge, it was, you know, it was just very rewarding. And I guess the only advice I can give is, like Josh said, just do it. Make, you know, go to game developer events, try to meet other people in the industry. That's just extremely motivating just to talk to other people who are doing it. Have a safety net. Don't quit your day job unless you have money saved up. Be prepared to live like Gandhi for a while. you're going to make mistakes. Not you always hear about the success stories. You hear about World of Goo and Minecraft and Braid, and you always hear like, you know, they knock the ball out of the park their first time out, or they do really well. You always hear those stories, but that's like maybe, you know, for the rest of us, that does not always happen. So your first game will probably fail. Don't let it stop you. Just learn from it and move on and keep going. So if you want it, if you're hungry enough for it and you believe in it, and then yeah, keep going. Do it.
Hear, hear.
Cool.
Hear, hear.
Well, do you guys have any other questions?
I do have one more. Go ahead, Jeff. Mine is completely
I'm unrelated. So. You go ahead.
Rock it.
I want to know what adventure games you guys are playing right now.
Like right now, as in this.
This very second.
Week.
This very second. So like, what adventure games have you played recently?
Dave, you want to start?
Okay. I've been going through Telltale's catalog, actually. I kind of avoided playing them for a long, long time because, you know, they were adventure games and I kind of didn't want to play them and get depressed that I couldn't do anything quite as good. But then finally I sat down and I played through the third season of Sam and Max, and they were it was so good, like, and so clever. And there were so many wonderful things about them. I started playing through their back catalog. I played through the Monkey Island games, which were also really good. I started playing the Back to the Future games, and those are also really good. So I don't play a lot of adventure games now because, again, it's like, I don't want to, I get that, feeling of, oh, I could do better, or I could never do as good. And I always get frustrated and depressed either way, but I'm still enjoying Telltale's games, even though I could never approach their level of quality, which, so I don't play a lot of adventure games, but I am enjoying theirs a lot.
Well, Telltale's just a little bit bigger than you. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
They have a few more people on their team. It's fine.
Just a few. Although I do have their PR, though I am using their PR personnel. So.
That's cool.
That's a hell of a start.
That is.
That's your plug, Emily. She's awesome.
Jeff, did you have something else?
No. That was good.
Okay. It sounded like I interrupted you.
No. I was saying I didn't have any more questions. That's all I was saying.
Okay.
Actually,
cool.
Josh didn't answer. Are you playing anything, Josh?
Actually, I will have one question. If you played a lot, actually, before I ask, yeah, Josh.
Sure. I'm not playing too much right now. Was pretty busy these past 2 months. You can imagine. One game. I don't know if you guys heard of it. It was nominated for an IGF award. It's called A House in California. I thought that was really well done. Basically, it takes like what you think an adventure game is and its standard mechanics, you know, like push, pull, take, talk to, and it totally subverts that. It turns your actions into think or remember or forget, and it really is kind of an investigation of how you can make adventure games that kind of explore a different space, in this case, which would be like memory or the past, which was really cool, I thought.
There was a huge line to play it at the IGF. I couldn't get over there to try it out. There was a huge line.
And it's called A House in California?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
It looks like an old mystery house. It's really good.
Cool. Just one really quick follow-up question to that. So what's your favorite point-and-click adventure of all time? Like from back in the day till now?
Oh, dear.
Or series. Maybe it's easier to say series instead of a single game. But
sure. I'd say the top two, not top three, because that's too many. The top two are The Secret of Monkey Island for me and Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
Oh, that was so good.
Ooh. Oh, cool.
It's an awesome game.
I guess my two favorite would be Gabriel Knight, which if you played Blackwell, that's no surprise. And Discworld Noir, which is kind of dated now, but I just the clues mechanic they have is just so awesome. It's just such a neat spin on adventure games and inventory, and I'm sort of stole a bit of that for Blackwell, which you know is my everyone keeps saying it's such an original idea, but I'm like, no, Discworld Noir did it first. Play that game, it's awesome. Anyway, yeah, those two games.
Very cool.
Cool. Well, that's all I got.
All right. Before we let you guys go, I want to say thank you for joining us. And why don't you pimp your stuff one more time?
Okay. WadgetEyeGames.com. That is Wadget with a J. We've got Shiva, Blackwell, Emerald City, Puzzle Bots, and Gemini Rue, which is number two on Metacritic right now in the PC section.
It's sitting at an 86. I just happened to
sitting
look it up.
Sitting at an 86, yes. And I'm looking at a huge stack of Gemini Rue packages that my wife has lovingly prepared while I talk to you guys. So everyone say thank you to Janet.
Thank you.
Cool. Once again, thank you guys so much for joining us. We very much appreciate it. And we enjoyed the talk, and we're very much enjoying Gemini Rue as well. So good job, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You guys have a great night.
You too.
Thank you once again, Josh and Dave, for joining us. You guys go check out Gemini Rue at WadgetEyeGames.com. Game's $15. It's really good. So, go check it out if you're into
adventure
games.
There's a demo up there, too, if you want to give it a shot.
There's a demo. It's going to end right before you get to the combat. So we really enjoy it, and we like those guys. They're pretty damn cool. And they, independent games, man, support that shit. That's just
absolutely
awesome.
For real.
All right, let's get it going. Hey, new releases?
Why not?
I'd like to hear some.
And now, with a list of games you'd have to be stupid not to like, here's Repeat.
Okay, so there's actually quite a lot of releases coming out this week, some of which Chris mentioned last week, because his Source releases seem to be running a week faster than reality.
Nah.
It happens. All right, so first up this week, for the PSP, we have Jutandia, The Timeless Land. Now, you should be caring about this game, because it's made by Opus Studios, who are the driving force behind the fantastic Half-Minute Hero.
Big poop.
Now, this also has a time mechanic to it, although it's not quite as rigid as Half-Minute Heroes was. Instead, this one, I believe you can pick, like, how long you want the game to be, and then it'll generate something based on that.
Pete Fountain?
Really? It seems to be a side-scrolling action RPG, I believe. But yeah, it looks pretty fantastic. That, and if Half-Minute Hero is anything to go by, it should be well worth your time.
Peter
also
Moore?
On the PSP this week, we're getting God's Eater Burst, not God Eater Burst. Apparently the extra S is important because, you know, it's all about eating multiple gods, so I'm sure it's going to piss off some Christians or something.
Pete?
But anyway, it's a Monster Hunter clone, and unlike most of it, this one actually seems to improve on things, so it may be worth looking into. This week also sees the actual release of Akamiden for the DS, so this is a follow-up to Akami. Looks pretty damn fantastic, very cutesy. The PS3 is getting Yakuza 4, which, unlike the previous game, is not getting ripped to shreds in the translation. In fact, only two things were changed. One was one of this quiz game arcade thing got cut out. Not a huge deal. And the other one was the intro song was changed for legal reasons. Again, not a huge deal. So all the maid cafes and hostess bars or whatever else crazy shit is all in there again. So there you go. Also on the PS3, we're getting Artanelico Koga Nil of Arceal?
Big Pete?
Something? I don't know, it's a Gust RPG. So it's probably a lot of generic anime whatever. Alright, the PS3 and 360 are getting Homefront, which is the North Korea Invades America first-person shooter written by the Red Dawn guy, so good to see him straying far from his wheelhouse there. And on the PSN is getting Slambolt Scrappers, which has been described as a combination of like a beat-em-up and tower defense and a puzzle game and some other crap, but yeah, it's got some pretty good buzz going around it, so it's probably definitely worth checking out if anything else. And Xbox Live is getting some sort of a poker game. Hooray for that. And that'll do it.
All right.
I do want to correct something, though. I think I might be correcting Repeat here.
What?
I think Okamaden's already out. Because I was at GameStop today, and they had it on the shelf. So,
are you sure it wasn't an empty box saying pre-order
no,
now?
No, they were like, there's one on the shelf, and there's also a few behind the counter. But my GameStop does have a habit of putting stuff on the shelf and teasing people. So they might have just got them in and just put them on there, like behind the counter, so people can see and they can take pre-orders from. Because I was thinking about buying it, but I should have asked, like, can I grab this? But it was there, so I could be wrong. Maybe it didn't come out last Tuesday by the time people hear this. And maybe it actually is tomorrow. But I will be happy, Pete, if it actually came out last week. Because I can finally be like, aha!
In your face! You're late. Pick of the week.
I'm looking at filling in the gaps, and I don't really think we need to.
Nah.
No, if it's nothing, yeah.
Yeah, nothing amazing. Topspin Tennis and MotoGP. Mm-hmm. And that's really all I see that's interesting. So, pick of the week.
I'm going to go Homefront.
I'm also going to go Homefront.
I'm going to go with God Eater Burst without the S because that's the way they named it in Japan, and that's the way I think it should have stayed.
That's right.
God's Eater Burst sounds just as stupid as Demon's Souls. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
You sound stupid. Demon's Souls is awesome.
I didn't say that Demon's Souls wasn't awesome.
I know. I come on. Moving along.
Go fuck yourself. Okay. So let's do some voicemails because we don't have any emails that we're going to go over right now, right?
Nah.
So
no.
We're just going to move straight into voicemails. Here's one.
Why not?
Hey, this is JJ92 here, and I just want to ask you 200 questions.
200 questions? Is that what you said?
A request at the end of this.
That's what I heard.
First round of question. Last week, Jeff, you said about kicking someone's chair away from underneath them. Did any of you guys, play a prank on one of your teachers when you were at school or college or whatever? Because, yeah, I can remember...
Oh, God.
My engineering teacher to his chair. And needless to say, I got pretty wrong on that. Funny as shit, but yeah, not wrong. Second one, has anything like big ever happened to you guys on a plane? The reason I ask is because I have a pretty bad peanut allergy, obviously, when I sell planes. Peanuts. So when I ask them to not sell peanuts, they send it over the intercom, but it accidentally comes out as... unfortunately, we have someone on board with an allergy. So, yeah, I came across that I was unfortunate on board in the first place. So, I guess if it was inconvenience in someone, I just feel like crap. Also, the request I wanted to do. With the email I sent you this voicemail with, there's a YouTube video. I want you to watch it. It's a video of me and my girlfriend on YouTube, and it's called Funny Spankwire Reaction. I dare you guys to watch the video that is in the description. Watch the link that's in the description. Video yourselves. Put it on any website you can. Honestly, you will not want to look at your penis again. It is just, it's just god awful. But when you watch your reaction back, it is so, so funny. Anyway, later guys. Thanks for listening and talk to you later. Bye bye.
Thanks, JG. You gotta stop hiding in your closet, though. I don't know if you're that embarrassed to be known to like leaving us a voicemail or something, but
pranks on teachers.
Yeah.
Who goes first? I've got one. Jeff, you said you got one, right?
Yeah, I got one.
Out of
sure.
Two, yeah.
All right. Well, Chris, you go first.
You want me to go first?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So when I was in high school, we had this English teacher that was really. Just, I don't know, annoying, I guess. And she was an older woman, and like to an extent, I kind of feel bad about this now. But and she was just really, really easy to play jokes on and get away with shit. And there was one day where the entire class got involved, and we had someone run by the classroom and knock on the door, and then as soon as she turned around and went towards the door to open it up. Everybody just grabbed like a wadded up paper ball and threw it at her. So she had like 30 wadded up paper balls hitting her all at one time. It was It was really ridiculous.
That is childish.
Yeah, we were in 10th grade, dude. That is exactly
what
it was.
That's what you do in 10th grade. Well, that's what you do in first year of college.
Throw shit at your teacher's head.
It was just a paper ball. It wasn't going to hurt.
Was it a sub teacher or your actual teacher?
No, it was the actual teacher.
Oh, well.
Mrs. McElroy. I remember her name, too.
Huh. Well, I'll go next.
All right. Go for it, bro.
It's a graduation day. Graduation day. You sit down. They call your name. You go up on the stage, get your diploma, and you shake hands with the superintendent, and you get off stage, throw your hat, and you go party. That's pretty much what graduation is, if you haven't done it yet. So anyway, we have made this big plan because at first we heard that the principal is the person that's going to be giving us the diploma and shaking our hands, and everybody hated this principal because the year before he took over for the principal that we loved, but he came in our senior year and we're like, oh, I hate this guy. So we were like, okay, we're going to make this plan. Well, the plan that we ended up doing kind of backfired on us because the superintendent ended up swapping with the principal and took his place. So we ended up taking the superintendent, which we had no problem with, and doing a prank on him regardless. But what the prank was, while we were waiting in line in our cap and gowns and everything, a couple of people in the front of the line had these two huge sacks of like these small, like almost marble sized stones and handed it to like everybody in line. So basically what hopefully everybody did, not everybody did it. When we went up there to shake their hand, we had the stone in our hand and we'd shake their hand with the stone in there. And then when we released hands after we shook hands, he would have to like, he had the stone in his hand and he had to shake more people's hands. So he ended up having to like, so every time he shook hands with somebody, you could see him put his hand in his pocket and drop stones in there. After he was done, he had these two full pockets of stones. Like there was even a point where he shook hands with somebody and the stone fell out and it dropped on the stage really, really loudly. And he bent over and picked it up, put it in his pocket. But it was like so funny because we were all in on it and he was like not too pleased, but it wasn't even meant for him. It was meant for the principal. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, the one I'm pretty sure I told this story before, but I think it was a long time ago. And if we have any new listeners, and well, JG, hopefully they'll appreciate it. But it was in ancient history class, and we're learning about ancient Ghana. And randomly, we were like me and two other guys. We started talking about G.I. Joe, and he didn't know what G.I. Joe was. Like, oh man, they had this movie about it. It's totally based on ancient Ghana. It's a more modern take on it, and more futuristic and all that stuff. And he's always asking questions like, oh, like, what's it about? And we're basically bullshitting him. And he's like, oh, we should watch that in class. We're like, yeah, we totally should. So we brought in G.I. Joe the movie on like a Friday or Thursday and started watching it. And like 15 minutes in, he's like, whoa, what is this? And we're like, it's G.I. Joe. And he's like, no. And we're like, no, trust me. Wait. You'll understand the whole kind of thing later. And we did this basically about on and off for every 20 minutes until the movie was over, and then he wasn't too pleased at all, and neither were some of the people in class, but it was hilarious. We thought it was funny. We're like, oh my god, we just convinced their teacher to let's watch G.I. Joe the movie. And so that's a kind of historical reference.
We should probably like preface that by saying it was the animated movie, correct?
It was the animated movie. Okay. Oh yeah, dude, it wasn't like not the 2 years ago.
Jeff wasn't in high school 2 years ago.
I know. I just wanted to make sure that was clear. I wanted to make sure that was clear.
With Cobra Law and all that kind of good stuff.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we got in trouble.
What was his other question?
Well, no, it was a request to watch a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Well, he sent it.
Yeah. He had another question too, but I can't remember what. Was.
Yeah, we'll watch it. We'll watch it later and comment on it.
Yeah. Did he have another question though?
I thought he had one other one. I can't remember what it was though.
Oh, I can't either.
And so it's honestly from my end. I don't know about you guys, but it was kind of hard for me to hear some of the stuff he's saying.
Yeah, I couldn't hear a lot of it, but I thought there was another question there. But oh, well, we'll revisit it next week when we talk about the Spankwire YouTube video or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
All right, I have one more voicemail, and here we go.
Beep. Hey. Hi, this is Drunken My Penis 08, and I got one thing to say for you guys for this week.
Oh, jeez.
That's right. Mortal Kombat's coming out next month. Hell yeah. Fuck. Whatever the fuck. I got hidden characters that I want to make for that game. And it's including the Indus crew. Including
what?
Travis Bombass, Travis Gaga. Yeah, Travis Gaga. Coming at you with his Lady Gaga outfit. Attacking and choking the enemy with the microphone as he horribly sings the tunes of Lady Gaga. The next
pretty
one.
Terrible.
Moose Man. That's right, Moose Man. Yeah. As he comes after you with his antlers, tearing your guts out, limbs, and possibly your head. The third one is Shino Master Chris. That's right, the master of the three. As he comes at you with his bladed hat made out of shurikens, as he tosses it, punches you, then uses it as his fatality, as he slices you up into millions of pieces. Not in half, but millions of pieces. Lisa and Megan or whatever, I forgot. As they all gang up into one group as a big towering enemy, as they destroy their enemy with bone-crushing kicks, boob-slapping boobs, and, of course, the death-defying, head-ripping fatality. Other characters will include from BG, both Trick Man Terry, as he... I can't think of what he would do. Something. I mean, there's Torgo. Oh, hell. He'll just use his money hat as a weapon and swing it over you. Put it over your head. And... bore you with his PS3 reveals.
Oh.
That's my penis 08. And I like to thank Google for calling me my penis 08. Now it's my new name. I'm out.
Thanks, Google.
Torgo would use his money hat. That's funny.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Shit.
Thank you, Mike. That was entertaining. That is all the voicemails that I've got. So all I right, believe then. That we can move on to question of the week.
Or yes, let's do it.
Okay, or do we want to do a couple Indus questions?
There's a couple really quick ones we can go over here.
Yeah,
let's I don't do want to feel like we're ignoring them.
We're doing pretty good on time. Let's do this.
So first one's coming from Nabishin. He's saying, "Will Jeff ever remember the name of the dog from Okami?"
No,
no.
And the sad part is, I saw this question earlier and. Wanted to remember what the dog was and make it a point to remember, but I can't remember. No. Answer is no, Nabishin. I hope you're happy. Shadow Haddo saying, what's your favorite video game soundtrack? I think we might have answered this before a couple times. But can you guys think of one quick off the top of your head?
Metal Gear Solid 2.
Nice. Chris?
Well... modern, I would say Symphony of the Night. Not so modern, I would say Foxanadu for the NES.
I definitely agree on the Symphony of the Night. If we're going like way back, 16-bit days era, I'd still have to go with ActRaiser. Love that soundtrack. Badass.
That was a good soundtrack, yeah.
One last one, not so much a question, just a general comment. Hatman, TC, he says, my wife has a fart app. She has more than one, I think, like Jeff has. She thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. And kudos, because it is hilarious.
Those things are great.
If you need to get one, get Excuse Me, because it's got the timer on it. You just leave your phone next to somebody, walk away, and just hilarity ensues.
Oh, shit.
It's great.
Okay.
So you can hit up Indus Questions on Twitter, at Indus Questions.
That is right. Thank you very much, guys, for sending your questions. All right, let's do Question of the Week.
Why not?
All right, this one's coming from Jeff. Jeff's idea was... what is a franchise that you loved when you were younger, but you don't like now? Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily play as much now.
Exactly. And
did
why?
I get the gist right, Jeff?
That
did
is basically exactly it. Something that you loved and now so much don't play, hate it, or just feel no urge whatsoever to kind of continue.
Okay. Answer the question of the week by sending us an email. That address is email@interactivedistractions.com. You can send us a voicemail as well. That number is 706-760-4337.
Correct. That is that is in fact the phone number. Yeah. I couldn't think of anything.
you can also get us on Google Voice. We should. I don't usually mention that, but interactivedistractions@gmail.com if you just want to record a message that way. And you can send MP3s to us. We're fine with that. Keep in mind that I'm wondering if I should start saying this because everyone else says it.
Saying what?
That if you call the number, standard long distance rate.
Oh, long distance. Yeah.
Let's see. Follow us on Twitter. We are Indus Podcast. And individually, we are Indus Chris, Indus Travis, Indus Jason, and Indus Geoff.
G-E-O-F-F.
Check out Geoff. Indus Pro and Indus Roadie as well. Follow us on Facebook. We are Interactive Distractions Podcast. And that is our wrap-up. You guys have anything else before we get out of here?
Don't think so.
No.
We have one more show before MGC.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
And
MGC,
we're going to be recording live. We'll be there on
We'll be
on
doing
site,
a show doing somehow. Yes.
All of us together, which is going to be interesting.
In one hotel room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Keeping it real while keeping it sexy.
I also want to throw out the reminder that, guys, we do have our March contest going on, and we have gotten very little feedback for this one, and I'm upset because it's such a cool topic. Jim Henson versus Konami. Who are your three main characters?
Don't no one else send some in. I've got a chance to win.
I'm trying to think if there was something else I wanted to mention, and I can't remember. Indus Stream, Tuesday nights, 9 o'clock. Join us, JustinTV/Indus. That's all I've got.
Okay, then. Let's call it a night.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show, and hope you guys enjoyed the video with Josh and Dave. We really enjoyed talking to them. If you enjoyed the show, please tell a few friends about us. And if you're on iTunes or Zune Marketplace, please leave us a review.
Five stars!
Until next week, my name is Chris.
I'm Travis.
I'm Jeff.
Play your games, and we'll talk to you next week.